What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Breakfast, episode 83. Actually, I changed the title. It was the Great Ice Fight, but Steve Canelli decided he didn't want it to be a fight instead, so we changed it to Ice or Not to Ice. That is the discussion. So, welcome to episode 83, to Ice or Not to Ice. That is the discussion. Today is May 23rd, 2014. You already heard Steve Canelli is one of my guests. He is the athletic trainer for the New York Giants. Josh Stone has been on a guest here before, and he is a bit of a controversial or a trouble starter here on Twitter and with some of his articles telling people they shouldn't use ice or shouldn't drink water. So we're going to hear some more about his ideas as we go out. So I am your host, Jeremy Jackson. I actually have some of my students here with me. They're going to be just helping with the recording and watching stuff, so I kind of pulled them out of class. If you're watching the video, you can see Steve has his video working, and Josh is having to use his phone, so he doesn't have his video working. So you just see him running on the beach, whatever race he was running there. All right, if you want to join our conversation, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, where you can find the live stream, and then using the hashtag VSMB, I should be able to see it right here, or Marlon or Lorena or Brianna, one of them, hopefully will see that stuff. So again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. So without much further ado from there, Steve, why don't we start with you? Why don't you go ahead and tell us who you are, what you do?
Okay, great. My name is Steve Canelli. Like I said, I work for the New York Giants. I've been there for quite some time, going on 23 years now, and it's just a great organization and a great place to work. So I really feel fortunate to be part of a wonderful organization like the Giants. Prior to that, I worked on every level, including the clinic, high school, and college levels. And my current title is Assistant Head Athletic Trainer. Recently, I formed a separate kind of company just because I tried to challenge myself a little bit more and kind of a consulting type of service and also provide some athletic development reconditioning to athletes in this local area. Again, on a part-time basis. So I've joined the Twitter ranks and put myself out there a little bit more than I'm used to and wind up on this show. So I'd like to thank you very much, Jeremy, for advancing the profession of athletic training. And I think you're doing an admirable job with these type of shows. So appreciate you having me on.
Sure thing. All right. So we're going to come back to your little side job and have a couple of questions about that later.
I just like to point out that my views here today are my views and don't necessarily represent those of the New York Giants. These are strictly mine. Although some might be shared, these are entirely my views. Thanks.
All right. Just for the record. All right. So, Josh, why don't you go ahead and tell us who you are and what you do?
I am a certified athletic trainer. I work at Human Kinetics, where I play the role, I guess, of a geek, where I get to read research and work with leading authors across the field and experts such as Steve, and the creation of textbooks that we find in higher education. That is my primary role here, and I work with them through all phases of the book, from concept to design to revising manuscript and whatnot. Prior to this, I did a lot of research with the National Academy of Sports Medicine under the direction of Mike Clark, and I also spent several years in the clinical setting working with Division I athletes down to the high school level, Olympic athletes. After I got out of the clinical setting, I got to a point where I just started thinking a little bit more and applying and looking at research. And I don't like to consider myself a fire starter or a controversial person. I just like to bring light and ask and have athletic trainers ask why and understand whether you decide to use ice, not to ice, or whether you agree with some of the things I say or don't say. I'm not here to tell you I'm right or wrong. I'm just asking individuals to think about it, about possibilities.
All right. That works for me. And so that's obviously the main topic that we wanted to talk about was the ice, because, you know, I think it was last year where I talked to Josh and Ryan Wance about about using ice. And so that's kind of changed my philosophy about how often you should use ice and how long you should use ice and that kind of thing. And then I read Steve Canelli, which he told me is Canelli, not Kennelly.
That's correct. My dad would be proud of you.
and so I read his blog post about, you know, it's kind of a more of an individual decision. And, you know, if this is what the athlete believes works, and then that's what we should go with, and not just bowing to whatever they think, but, you know, knowing that it may or may not be giving the actual physical effect, but the psychological effect is probably greater. And so that's kind of the understanding I took from there. So it's an interesting perspective from two guys that I think are doing really great things. And so I really want to open up the conversation really for you guys. And then if I have a question, I'll throw it in there. But why don't you guys just go ahead.
Can I start for a minute? Can I start for this one thing? Let me just reiterate what you're saying, that most everything of what I do is science-based. And I have a lot of respect for what Josh is doing and the work that he's done. And, you know, I believe in ice. And the research now is pointing in a different direction. And we have to respect that. And it doesn't mean that I can entirely want to give up ice. And as we speak, I'll reiterate, but I just wanted to, you know, it's not just based on an athlete's decision. It's based on a lot of different things that go into it. One of them being, you know, does the athlete feel it beneficial in whatever we're treating at that present time? So most everything we do is science-based, and it's also based on the art, how we apply it from an individual basis. So that's my personal feeling. You have to kind of blend the two. Works for an individual, I'll go with it. If it doesn't, I'm not going to go with it.
I'll second that. I think that the psychological aspect of an individual is very important. When you read the materials that I did when I started the whole non-ice process, I chose one athlete that I could trust, that had full faith in what I was doing and was tired of not getting better, and was willing to try something new and have an open mind about it. There's no way.
Okay, so if you are listening live, and I know it's recording on Google Plus and all the other things, I'll check this out later, but the computer just said Skype stopped working. So I'm going to call these guys back and see if we can go from there. All right, so I think...
Hey, Josh. Yeah, Josh can repeat what he said, because I think half of it I heard and then it cut out.
Yeah, I don't know where I got to, or what cut off, but basically I was saying that I think the psychological component plays a big role. It plays a much larger role than one would anticipate. I do not think that we should allow athletes to dictate what is proper and what is not proper, but if we're going to go out on a limb and try something, we have to be cognizant with who are the psychological profile of that athlete. And when I tried this out for the first time, I chose one athlete who was open, receptive, and willing to do anything they could do to get better. And from there, I allowed it to grow organically. And what I was finishing off with saying is that I would never apply a no ice concept cold turkey to an entire team. I would allow it to grow organically from one athlete to the next.
And I would agree with that. Go ahead.
One thing I must say, though, and I know this is not designed to be a fight, that anything that Steve says is completely wrong, because I'm a Redskins fan, huge Redskins fan. And we know Giants fans just, and those who work there are off. So, no, I'm just teasing.
Well,
I had to get it in.
I think we've had their number a little bit, right? A little more than they've had ours, but that's why you play the games, right? It's all good.
Yep,
I appreciate that. Yeah. Well, you guys are battling with the name change now, so we'll see where that goes.
I know. I got a bigger problem. Sorry to take that off course. Go ahead.
No, that's all right. You can hear it all the time. But yeah, and I agree with what you are saying, in that we just don't apply it because the athlete wants to apply it. To me, it has to have some kind of physiological basis. Most of the time I apply ice is in the acute setting, and especially post-operatively. I mean, our guys come in post-ACL, and like I said in my article, and once we ice them, they seem to relax a little more. We're able to exercise them, get them on the bike, do straight leg raises, whatever it calls for. So it just seems in that component that it works. And I know the recent studies that Josh was pointing to, I still don't believe, you know, there is concrete evidence there that says icing is bad for you. Yes, I know it may delay healing, but in the same sense, if we are taking away their pain, then providing them with some kind of range of motion or exercise program, we're doing them justice. You know, everything has in life is about moderation and its advantages, disadvantages of using whatever modality you want. But for me, I've always coupled ice with some form of exercise. And I, you know, we talked about Craig Deniger before. Back in 1987, I was thinking he was preaching you just can't use ice as a standalone modality way back then. And I've always agreed with that. You know, I don't use ice by itself. I combine it with compression, elevation, and exercise on a daily basis. So there's more to it than just ice. And I think we have to look in terms of how we use ice to get the athlete better.
I agree with you 100%. A lot of the people that to me about ice. Now, one thing is I have not seen a lot of articles that say it is bad for you outside of the delay of healing, which could potentially be bad. But I have not seen several articles that show that it expedites healing or makes things better. I think that's where my question of why. I've always been a why guy. Why are we doing certain things? And that's one area where I always say, well, why? Why do we use it that much? Now, I've never tried the no ice postoperatively from a clinical standpoint. I've tried it on ankle sprains. In fact, I just tried it a couple weeks ago. I rolled my ankle. I'd say it was a grade 2 ankle sprain. And I didn't ice it. What I did was I did other modalities that we have to facilitate the removal of swelling, but allow inflammation to occur and decrease hypoxia. And my ankle is fine. It's 2 weeks later. I didn't apply any compression, didn't apply any ice, and I have no issues with it. But I've never, and I've tried it with other athletes as well, but I've never tried it postoperatively, nor have I seen any evidence to suggest that it helps. On the flip side, when we're talking postoperatively on with regards to post-ACL surgery, I have seen evidence that supports ice for arthrogenic muscle inhibition. However, that's the only area that I've seen the benefits of ice. But with the other areas, I have not seen benefits or negatives. Right. I guess my biggest question is of all the tools that we have in our toolbox, we use ice, and I would challenge you, Steve, to look at your treatment logs, and you would probably concur if you looked at your treatment logs of what athletes are getting receiving. I would say ice is still predominantly number one. I know it's certainly the case at institutions across the country, but I'm not sure about your particular institution. But when you look at the data, I mean, we're looking at ice being used 4 or 5 times more frequently than any other exercise modality, therapeutic program that we have in our arsenal. So I would expect if we're going to use it that much, that the research, that this is a miracle cure as much as we use it. My main reason for writing these articles is to say, is it really that good that we every day after practice have 30 ice bags going on our volleyball players or 30 ice bags going on our baseball athletes for tendinopathy? And that's where my question comes in.
Right. Well, I won't speak on what we do on a daily basis as far as ice treatments, but I will say from a personal philosophy that in general, I think athletic trainers do use too much ice, and I think they use it as a crutch. I've heard numerous players from various levels come up to me and say, put ice on it, right, because that's what I'm always told to do. And, you know, that upsets me because that means that athletic trainer, whoever they've had in the past, isn't doing their due diligence. I mean, and the worst-case scenarios are the ones that say, sit on their desk and say, go get some ice and go make it yourself. And that I don't have much tolerance for. But as far as a modality, again, I use it as part of a toolbox and for the right situation at the right time, mostly in acute injuries. I've become not really a big post practice ice person myself, although yes, I still do it. So I think it's more on an individual basis for me, like I reiterated before, in that every modality has to have its purpose. I don't see a benefit either psychologically or physiologically. The psychological can increase the physiological, in my opinion. If that athlete feels where he's helping himself or herself, then yes, if I feel like it will do something in order to progress them in any way, shape, or form, I don't think ice is that, that much of a pariah or a bad type of modality. I haven't seen, like you said, any type of studies that have said that ice is not bad. Matter of fact, we talked about ACL there. I just read something. I think it was just a pilot study by Mergier, I think, just came out this month that said basically that, I'll read it, dynamic intermittent compression combined with cryotherapy decreases analgesic drug requirements after ACL reconstruction and improves the postoperative recovery of range of motion, which is kind of what I found all along. My goal has always been if we can get them off the pain medicine as soon as possible, that is doing them a lot better than staying on pain medicine. And if we can do it with ice and limit their pain and let them sleep a little bit better at night, those kind of things that will definitely affect the rehabilitation, I'm okay for it. If it delays healing a little bit, well, I'm looking at the big picture. I'm thinking 9 months, 6 to 9 months in a rehabilitation. If we ice early on, how much are we really affecting that? We're not stopping, and you can, chime in. Are we really stopping that inflammatory response? Or are we delaying it? And again, they have so much swelling and so much edema. And how much are we really delaying? Because again, as we know, inflammation or chronic inflammation can degrade the joint. It can cause instability. It can shut down muscles. So if we can limit that, and again, it's a controversial topic, and I still believe, ice is valuable for that secondary hypoxic tissue response, then I'm going to do it. But then again, I'm not just put ice on it. I use a lot of different modalities. I use a lot of different exercises. We couple it, combine it, and go from there.
I agree with you. I think we keep going back to the same thing that we both keep saying, which is using our toolbox that we have. We have a full arsenal, and I agree with you. I think we've become complacent where, let's put ice on it. You have a patellar tendinopathy or a shoulder impingement issue, and every day you come in and get an ice, and we're not working on other things to address the issue, what benefit is that happening? If I've seen an athlete for 3 years now, and every day after practice, they're continuing to get ice on that knee or that shoulder, we got to be doing something differently here. And with regards to the hypoxia and the other toolboxes, this is where my mindset comes in. You talked about, even if we have to delay it a little bit, in my opinion, I think there's a give and take there. I think that, no doubt about it, ice resolves pain. But we also have many other modalities that help reduce pain, as well as exercises that can help reduce pain. And I think that we avoid utilizing those techniques to do it in a difficult balance of, hey, is my goal to get swelling out of the area? Is it best to inhibit healing? Or do we use many of our other tools, such as ankle pumps or some type of intermittent compression or some type of lymphatic drainage massage to help facilitate removal and lymphatic uptake? That's where I kind of come into play. And I really do think it is a case-by-case basis, just as you said. It really is a case-by-case basis. But the most important thing is, let's use all of our tools. If we have, and the problem is, and I presented at the NATA about this, the problem is athletic trainers are stuck in a time crunch. In the traditional setting, you have 300 athletes, 200 athletes coming into your clinic at the same exact time, 10, 20 minutes, 30 minutes before practice. And then right after practice, they want to get in, get out, and go on their way. So we, as athletic trainers, are stuck with, okay, what can I do in this 15 minutes? And unfortunately, we resort to heat, stim, and ice. And I don't know if we're fixing the problem in that case. When I think we're just kind of putting on a temporary Band-Aid because we don't have the time to do anything else. And I think we have to be inventive and manage our time to fix the problem.
And I agree with you. I mean, one of our players, I just worked with him in the past few weeks here on a lateral meniscectomy. And, we discontinued ice, I think, after the first week or so. And he did well. So when he comes in, we just start right with the warm-up. So that's, I agree with it's very, very individualistic. Now, I did another one back in January, one of our players, and he felt the ice helped him a lot more, and their rehabs were very similar. They both had very good rehabs. And so, I think part of it is their protoplasm, they have a good genes and they healed well and they came around quick. And they did very well. So where you have other cases where that swelling and that inflammation seems to linger. So, I mean, if we can reduce that amount of swelling, or, overnight with compression or game ready or something, that I'm all for it. If that person sees some progress the next day, that's okay. And that's what I'm saying is everybody needs, I agree with you, and we treat and we rehab on an individual basis. Every situation, person, position, all the parameters need to be considered and map out that plan. So I think we're in agreement with that. What I want to ask you is that as far as ice delaying or limiting inflammation or slowing down the healing rate, how many studies have you come across? Is it just the one that Dr. Merkin? Because I tried to look it up, and I just saw the one with the Dr. Merkin, as far as the IDF, and is that what it?
The insulin growth factor.
Yeah, IGF. My bad. Yeah, I haven't. And that was done on mice. And I don't discount animal studies at all. But has there anything out there, because I hadn't found it, that shows that in human tissue?
Well, number one, I think first off, the story from Dr. Merkin, he provides little scientific evidence that is relevant. I just thought it was interesting that the guy who coined the term is now going back. The articles that he provided have very little scientific efficacy, in my opinion.
That's what I had surmised myself.
Yeah. But that's not, there have been a lot of articles, but one, and fairly recently, the NATA position statement. The NADA, when they do these position statements, Doug Cassa and his crew spend 4 or 5 years digging through meta-analyses and systematic reviews. And I think in randomized control trials, that's the evidence we need to look at, not mice studies and laboratory studies. We need to look at RCTs, systematic lit reviews, and meta-analyses. But when you look at the position statements by ACSM or AMA or NATA, they go through years and years of data and select only the highest quality studies in order to come up with position stance as an organization. And the NATA produced a study on the position stance for management of ankle sprains. And they went through and they combed through all the data, range of motion, therapeutic exercise, cryotherapy, everything you can think of. And they rated the data. How good does this work? And every single item that was related to cryotherapy and their entire position statement was rated a C, the worst evidence to support it. And every single item that talked about load, range of motion, and exercise was an A or a B. And we're looking at, these are not my studies, they're not lab studies, those will be eliminated from this talk. These are systematic lit reviews, meta-analyses, and randomized control trials that help our clinical decision-making. That's just one particular study. But, Craig Deniger, his partner Mick Johnson, has also been doing a lot of work on cell differentiation, progenitor cells, and manipulation of cells, and how that is what's really changing with gene regulation is what's happening. There was a Cochrane review in the database for cryotherapy of nonspecific neck pain back in 2013 by William and I can't say the guy's name, Sir Canadian or something like that. Hubbard did a system reactive review way back in 2004 yeah. on cryotherapy. There's been a lot, and there's number yeah. one, there's been a lot of randomized control trials, but systematic lit reviews is where the real meat and potatoes comes from.
That was the Hubbard Denninger. They did a systematic lit review. I read that one.
Uh-huh.
Getting back to just the NATA position statement, which I did go over, in all fairness, cryotherapy was graded as C, but so was thermotherapy in acute and subacute, as well as electric stim, and I believe that was just for swelling. So all the modalities in that lit review were graded C, not just ice. And then
and I love it.
I know you're not a modality guy, but I just wanted to point that out. So fairness to you as well, I know you're not a modality guy, but to just throw cryotherapy in there, you have, in my opinion, you just need to add the other two components, the modalities that were listed. And then it's funny because, yes, functional rehab, which we all agree on, is the number one priority to get athletes better. And balance training were listed as A's. And then they listed range of motion, flexibility, strength, and joint mobilization all as B's. So in my opinion, it's a combination of everything. And A, B, C, that's the order. Actually, I'd probably include range of motion, strength, and flexibility as an A myself. But that's the kind of, looking at that, that's kind of how I dress my rehab or my treatment protocols. Very limited or more limited modality use. Much more exercise-induced treatment programs. But
I think that's where we need to shift to. And I think it's a management of that time that we have. When we have 15 minutes of time, what are we doing in that 15 minutes? When you have 60, 70 athletes coming in at one time, wanting your time, what do you do in that 15-minute time frame? Do you give them the C-rated modality, or do you find something to treat the underlying cause? And that's the issue at hand here, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I would definitely agree. What do you do in a situation where, and I'm just throwing it out there, you use a lot of exercise and range of motion. We're trying to get the guy, the athlete, restore homeostasis as fast as possible. But they come in the next day with more of an effusion. Then what is your plan? Use any modalities, or do you still continue to put them on the bike or something less stressful to the joint or the injured tissue? How do you attack that?
Well, I would revise what I did the day before. What did I do the previous day that caused significant
infusion? Yeah, what do you do for recovery?
I would probably use modalities for recovery, but to just say which one and to say one as a global, right. Which one would I use? I couldn't say that. I think it would be a case-by-case basis.
Right.
It would most likely, majority of the time, it would be some type of manual therapy. I might choose some type of biophysical modality, but I would say way, way down at the bottom of that list of my priority would be ice, because I don't think ice is going to help take effusion and reduce it. I don't think heat will get in there into a knee joint and reduce effusion and help force effusion out. Those would be near the bottom.
Right, and I would agree. Only if they came in, not feeling well, I think I would use ice for pain control. I think I would use massage to milk the tissue, and I think I would use active release technique or some type of soft tissue work as well, and see how they are. So I'm in agreement with that, only I think I'd put a little more emphasis on modality aspect in the initial treatment than you would. And again, it all comes down to individual, what's going to work for that individual. And I think a lot of athletic trainers get lost in that, as you said before, And they're quick to hit the ice stem and elevation or whatever, as opposed to if we have 15 minutes, all right, let's go in the back, let's work on some range of motion, let's work on strength and stability, and then go to practice. So I'm in agreement with that. But again, we might have an athlete say, I need 5 minutes ultrasound before I go to practice. And I don't think 5 minutes ultrasound is going to hurt anyone. Let's do 5 minutes ultrasound. So, it's an individual basis, but I don't think we're harming the athlete by using modality prior to practice. I would prefer heat prior to practice, and mostly we do use heat as a modality prior to practice, in addition to some form of exercise to get that athlete ready for practice.
Jeremy, I think the interesting thing here, if you just sifted through everything we just said, number one, there's a benefit to evidence-based practice in athletic training and our new requirements by the BOC to have evidence-based practice. Because it's going to force us to change the way we think and look at things so that we're not getting stuck in these old anecdotal habits. But the key point is data and research and clinical experience. The beauty about medicine, healthcare, physical therapy is that we've had our time to work on certain things and know what works best from our perspective. And I don't think that anybody who's listening to this should take this away and say, ice is the only way to go, or I should never ice. You're a professional, you're board certified, and you should take the opportunity to see what works best for you. And I don't think there's ever been a clinical situation that I've worked in where I did the same exact thing as my peers. I would learn something from them I might work, and they would do something completely different. I just did an article the other day on pelvic upslip and anterior nominate and active release and positional release on that type of material and muscle energy, and I had a lot of people say, this doesn't work. Okay, that's good. That doesn't work for you. There's evidence to go both ways, and it works for me. And I think that's the most important thing here, is to just don't fall into these lines of just doing this whole monotonous thing day after day. Evidence-based practice will help us change our mind and help us become better clinical decision makers and not just do things.
I would agree, and I think what you made a good point initially, in that it comes down to the science, which you always have to respect, and it comes down to experience and how you've handled and dealt with athletes over the years. And I think I'm a much better clinician now than I was 10, 20 years ago, and I put a lot of time and effort into it. Early in my career, I wasn't as good as a clinician, but I've worked hard at it, and now it's become a passion of mine. And again, it's combining, the good clinicians know how to combine the science, the art, and the experience, and their experience, and do it, which is best for the athlete. And ice is, yes, it's a component of your toolbox, as is a lot of different things. And like we say, it's a piece of the puzzle. If we can figure out what works best for this individual athlete, we're going to, work on putting the pieces of that puzzle together, whether it's, active release, whether it's acupuncture, whether it's ice, whether it's exercise. I mean, we're going to explore a lot of different modalities and exercise techniques, all within the realms of, all within the, the confines of the healing environment. But at the same time, we need to stress the tissue in order to build muscle strength and function again. So I think it's the combination. Like, people just look at it and say, well, is ice good or bad? And to me, it depends. Depends on the individual. It depends on a lot of other factors. So I like that point. It's science, experience, and doing what's right for your athlete. I mean, we have we have one of our coaches who's got a chronic knee, and he'll probably need a replacement soon. But the one thing he works hard in practice, and he go, and the one thing he likes to do after practice is ice, because he said he makes his leg feel so much better after he ices. So who am I to argue that? Nope, I can't put ice on you. Yeah, we're going to put ice on you because it makes you feel better. And the next day you can come in and walk. And so, again, it all comes down to the individual and the treatment program.
Yeah, you mentioned something about becoming a better clinician. Ironically enough, I became a better clinician when I got out of the traditional sense and I had a time to sit back and look at the evidence and apply it to individual cases. When I was bombarded with athletes all the time, I never had the time to say, hey, let me spend a half hour, 45 minutes with you before and after practice to see if this works for the next 3 or 4 weeks when you have a bunch of other athletes knocking on your door. So ironically, me stepping out of the clinical practice and getting more into the research mode and doing consultation and working as a clinician on the side, I think made me better because it allowed me to focus on one person at a time. And I just think I applaud athletic trainers like yourself. There's an athletic trainer here at the University of Illinois who is absolutely phenomenal. And I respect because I know what that university setting's like. I know he's busy, but he has the ability to apply new things all the time and not get stuck in the mundane total ways that we've always treated.
Right. And, you know, my world, I'm very fortunate in that we have anywhere from 60 to 100 athletes. And we have 4 full-time athletic trainers on staff, plus 1 full-time, what we call like a year-long assistant. During the season, we have additional help where we have another PTATC come in. Because what we've evolved to, and I can speak in generalities, obviously, is that players require a lot more one-on-one time, and they deserve that one-on-one time. So we spend a lot of our time in manual therapy, spend a lot of our time working in range of motion, strength, overall function, one-on-one, one-on-two, because we don't have 300-400 athletes coming in the athletic training room. And, you know, I, for one, I'm very, very grateful for that. So we do have time to spend one-on-one with our guys, especially in the off season. And so that we can see it. So I can relate to what you're saying as well. And, you know, if we were in a university or high school setting where a lot of those high schools, they're just doing triage and they don't have the time because they're covering every event, trying to get the athletes ready for practice. It doesn't mean they can't do a better job in terms of treatment and rehabilitation. But I remember when I was a high school athletic trainer, I would go to football practice almost daily and have all the athletes that were out with me. And this was back in the late 80s or early 90s. And we do some on-field work with all of our athletes when practice started. So I think it's all how you approach it. I think it's all how, you know, you set up your system to work what's best for you. But I think you have to look at the whole package and not just the individual modality.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree 100%.
Well, that's good. This was easy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest. I was looking at your, you know, overall at your blogs and I was very impressed, you know, and I'm just a rookie at this and I'm just trying to get some things going. So, I'm a little, you know, just kind of feeling my way through. So when this, when you asked me to do this, I was a little hesitant, but at the same time, I wanted to get my voice out there and I wanted to, you know, let the public out there know what I do and what I believe. To me, you know, again, you look at the big picture and you know, it comes down to common sense too. I mean, I don't think people, I see a lot of athletic trainers for whatever reason, don't use a lot of common sense. And, you know, if you just work with the athlete or athletes on an individual basis, you can do right by them. So, you know, you just put the human element into it. And I think a lot of times that's lacking.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. You know, we talk about this in our setting. But this same issue affects physicians. You go to one physiatrist and they're going to treat you a completely different way from another physiatrist. You go to one orthopedic surgeon and they're going to do something completely different treatment-wise, whether medication or their therapeutic exercises that they and modalities that they prescribe, they're going to be completely different. And then you look at how is it possible that we in Western medicine are completely different than traditional Chinese medicine. That medicine has been around for much, much longer. It works very, very well, or otherwise Western medicine would be over there, and we wouldn't have acupuncture and Chinese herbalist shops opening up here in the States. But their whole philosophy is to promote inflammatory response in a lot of areas. So I just think it's, I think it's interesting how we can have two medical disciplines that are completely polar opposites, but yet they both work. So it just makes me wonder, if how is that possible, and how do we know which one is better?
Well, I think, part of it may have to do with modern day sports, and that the emphasis of winning now. We're always looking for shortcuts on how to get the athlete from points A to B, the fastest possible time. But as we all know, it's nearly impossible or impossible to speed up the healing process. We can optimize it. So I think that factors in. It's a lot of, pressure in all sports, not just professional, college, high school, and unfortunately now youth, which is totally ridiculous, but that's a subject for another day. But so it comes down to, where we've evolved to as a society, where we've evolved to in terms of sports. And I think our treatment regimens have, put ice on it, that numbs it, go back to play. And is that right? No. But unfortunately, we've come down to it, and it's practiced widely. So I think we're looking for the quick fix, and pain control, obviously to me is always our number one priority. Yeah. We need to control that pain before we can advance to anything else. But are we, putting the athlete at risk? Well, that's another question for another day. But,
I was overseas with our volleyball team. We played the Swiss national team for our very first time there. And it was my first time there. Somebody got injured, and I asked for ice. And they looked at me like I had three eyes. Now, this is the Swiss national team, and they, too, are competitive. They want to get their athletes back out. But they look like I was crazy. They don't use ice in their water.
I mean, I agree. And, we've spent some time in Europe as well. I was in the World League of American Football way back when. Giants played over there. And you run into similar issues in that nobody has ice machines the size of the ice machines in the United States. They look at you like, hey, you need how many pounds of ice? So, but I think there's a role for ice in athletic training, in the treatment of individual athletes now. So I won't discount it, but I'm looking at the literature and pay a little more attention to it. Hopefully there'll be some more good research coming out. We work with some of the greatest physicians, in my opinion, in the world as far as orthopods. And they're always looking for, they're always looking at the research, performing their own research. So I weigh heavily on that. And it's served me well over the years. I'm fortunate to work with these individuals. So I have a lot of respect for you and what you've been doing. And, obviously working at a place like Human Kinetics, it certainly expands your knowledge. So, just keep up the good work. And there's a role and there's a place for most modalities. And it's just based on your philosophy and your individual treatment program.
Josh, are you still there? It's showing that there was a problem with the call. So I think it may have dropped Josh. So you might not have heard your whole compliment to him there, Steve.
Well, his loss. No, no, just kidding. If you can get him back, we can hammer out some more stuff. Whatever you want to do.
It's okay. Well, it says it's trying to get him back. So, while he's doing that, tell me a little bit more about your side job, the thing you started, and it's Kennelly.
Oh, come on now! You got to get that last name right.
See, look, there you go. I was even talking with my wife about it. I was like, I was like, I don't know if he's from New York, but Kennelly sounds like something that'd be down south, and Kennelly sounds to me something to be like more northern pronunciation.
Yeah. Well, so. Most people when I say Kennelly think it's an Italian name, but it's an Irish name. And my dad who passed away last year, he was big on I even told a little story at the wake, and he was adamant on getting the name right. Me, I would not be as diligent in correcting people, but I think since he passed, now I correct most people. So yes, it's Kennelly, Steve Kennelly. And I started this business. Number one, I felt like I needed a different kind of challenge. I've been with the Giants 23 years, and don't get me wrong, that's a great challenge, and I really truly enjoy love what I do there, and will continue to do what I do there. But I had a son who, he's in his first year of college now. And while he was growing up, I had the opportunity to coach, and I had the opportunity to kind of be a strength coach for him well. And it hit me that a lot of people don't know how to get athletes better and what to do when they're injured, nor do they know how to prepare themselves, you know, from a strength and conditioning standpoint. So I said, you know, I can do more for these kids. I can do more for myself. And it took a long time for me just to kind of pull the trigger on it. And I finally got the Giants permission to do this on a part-time basis. And so I started, I think I had my first blog post after I got, was in February. So I'm kind of in the infancy. And right now I'm just kind of trying to build an online presence a little bit. I haven't really pursued the other aspects of it because of time crunches. But eventually, you know, I want to grow it to a little bit better and bigger, and just to have a voice out there, because I think there needs to be more voices as far as from an athletic training standpoint, as well as a strength and conditioning standpoint. And, you know, to do right by these athletes and try to help them make good decisions and assist coaches in making good decisions when it comes to health and wellness. So that's probably why I started it. And again, it's been a challenge. It's been a challenge myself. And I found myself a little bit more involved in research and things like this now. Whereas, so I've become a better clinician for it as well, or a better professional, so to speak. And we'll see where it grows. Again, it's just going to, I'm not interested in doing anything past a part-time basis now, because I love my job at the Giants too much and don't want to jeopardize that. So that's my primary focus, but I would like to build this as well.
How do you feel that that's been received?
Well, I think it's a slow-going process, and I don't think anything happens overnight. So it's building. The interesting thing is it builds a little more each week. Not a lot, but that's good. So, a matter of fact, I would like to, you know, I was going to ask Josh for some tips. I think he's got so many followers, and obviously his ice has sparked a lot of controversy, and he's had a lot of comments. But, you know, to me, it's just I'm not on a time constraint here. See how I build it. We'll see how it goes. I'll continue to voice my opinions and voice what I believe is right. And see what happens. So it's been fun and it's been a challenge, and I'll continue to do it. And if it doesn't go so well, so be it. I so far it's been a pretty good response. So we'll keep going.
Yeah, I know that. I think I talked to Josh right after he had that initial post about ice, and he said something. I think he said 13,000 hits on the blog post about the ice, and so, you know.
Wow.
And that's part of the reason that I titled that the way I did, you know, because...
Oh, I don't mind. I mean, I was just teasing anyway, because your first tweet was basically, let's have a nice discussion, only a discussion. And then the next thing was, here's the fight. So I got a chuckle out of it. I was telling the guys at work, oh my gosh, what's going on here? But anyway, it's all in fun. And obviously, it's good for the athletic training. It's good to... Well, again, that's kind of why I'm doing this too. I honestly do feel that trainers need to take more of a performance enhancement approach to their overall treatment machine. I think a lot of times they hand off to the strength and conditioning a little bit too early. We need to follow up on what we do and be a little bit, I wouldn't say more of a professional, but just go beyond the scope of just when they're ready to go to strength and conditioning, you know, just hold on to them and take them start to finish. But I'm speaking in generalities, not individual specifics. So, you know, so that's part of the reason to give a voice to athletic trainers as well. How did you find me?
Twitter recommended.
Ha!
I think just because, you know, we're athletic trainers, so we kind of follow the same people.
Yeah. See, I'm kind of quiet and reserved by nature, so it was a lot for me to go on Twitter and Facebook, but I've really enjoyed it, and I think it's a great medium for spreading the word. So that's something that, you know, in the past I'd say, I'm not going, you know, Twitter, forget that. And then, you know, you open your eyes a little bit more. It's the same thing with learning, you know. And once I jumped on board, I said, wow, I've been missing a really good, you know, platform for a long time here. And so it doesn't matter when you start, but, you know, as long as you start. So I was glad I jumped on board. And, you know, I've seen a lot more people met a lot more people or converged with a lot more people since I started in February, I believe.
Yeah, and I'd get a lot of information from Twitter. I mean, obviously, you know, I've never met Josh. This is the second time I've spoken with him, but we interact a good bit on Twitter. And just like you guys were saying, I feel that I'm better at what I do because of things that I see on Twitter, because otherwise I'm stuck here in the athletic training room and it's just me and Bill. He's been here for a long time. I'm relatively new, but we don't get outside of this much, except for now we have Twitter and now I have the podcast. So each week I'm learning something. So, you know, it's really good to hear from you guys that are always learning something new. So,
yeah. And what you're doing again, you know, is really great. I mean, I listen to a lot of podcasts, but there's not many athletic training podcasts, or if there are, I haven't found them. So maybe you can enlighten me. And so I think we need a little more podcasts. I mean, if you look at the strength and conditioning world, there's a lot of them. There's a lot of good ones. I mean, there's some very intelligent people out there that I've learned a lot from podcasts. So, and the same thing with Twitter. I mean, I'm trying to keep up with all the good information on Twitter. I just don't, there's not enough time in the day. So, yeah, I found Twitter to be similar like you. And so I'm glad you started this podcast. I looked at your website. So, I mean, you should be applauded for again, doing something, you know, giving back to the profession, so to speak.
Yeah. Like I said, I've learned a lot and, you know, I meet a lot of cool people because otherwise you and I probably would have never talked, you know?
I don't think so.
So, I mean, you know,
unless I met you at the NATA.
Yeah. And, you know, I know Roland Ramirez came over here. Do you know Roland from the Texans?
Yes. Roland is a good man. He does a lot of good work for the PFAS, Professional Football Athletic Trainer Society. Good man. And Jeff Kaplan, the head athletic trainer, is a friend of mine. So they're a really good staff down there. But I know Roland pretty well.
I say everybody that I mentioned Roland to, they're like, oh, man, I love Roland. Roland's he's real sharp, you know, on physical therapy stuff. He's right there at the front. You know, he always knows what to do. So it's been cool to be able to have him on here. And then, you know, we got to talk some about his DS2 platform that he created
because
he saw a need. So,
yep. Yeah, Roland is good. And that, you know, that's, I think that's your head on the head. You see a need and you challenge yourself, step out of your comfort zone and you feel better and make a difference. It's all good.
All right, so I don't know. We've tried to call Josh a couple of times, and I'm not sure what's going on there. Yeah, it was really interesting to hear both of you talking a lot about studies, and I saw that you have stuff that I guess you printed out so that it was easy for you to look at and reference.
But, right. Well, you know, I think in something like this, it's important to do your homework a little bit. So, you know, I thought all in all that Josh and I would agree on most things. And that's pretty much what happened. Getting back to the whole ice, I just think there's a place for it. And, it sounds like he thinks that way too. You just can't discount what a modality that's been used for a long, long time. And people, you know, use it because it makes them feel better or it decreases swelling or whatever it may be. I just don't think you can throw it out saying, nope, doesn't work or it's bad for you. And again, I haven't seen any of these studies that say it's bad. Icing is bad. You know, the worst it seems like it does is delay healing. You know, but sometimes you can get benefit from ice and overcome that delay by allowing them to exercise when you wouldn't because of pains. Pluses and minuses to everything we do.
Yeah. I think I said it before. I really appreciate how whenever your blog post, it's simple enough, like it's solid, but it's simple enough for me to understand because you guys were talking about all these studies and honestly using words that I don't really know what you were talking about. I mean, maybe just because I was trying to type them in, but so there's some of those things that are really just over my head and it's easy for somebody like Josh loves editing and so he loves words. And so it's easy for him to get big words and to put them in there and to use them. But for me, it's kind of like, Let's make this a little bit simpler. So whenever I read your blog post, it's really simple. Just, hey.
So you're saying I'm a simple guy, huh? No.
I'm saying you communicate well to simple people like me.
Yeah. No, well, here's the deal. I do think Josh, yeah, he's very well spoken. And where I take a more of an approach while you said, you know, everything is more basic. Everything is more common sense. Everything is more simple to me. That's how I see things. And, you know, if I read Josh's blogs, I got to read them two or three times myself. So to me, you have to just, you know, take a simple approach, use the basics, start with the foundation, building the foundation, and progress from there. It's, you know, treating athletic injuries in and of itself is not that difficult. You need to listen to your athlete. You need to pay attention to the parameters, the healing parameters, and you need to progress accordingly. So if you do all those three, you'll get that athlete better. And it's not that complicated, yet you just need to use a little common sense.
Yeah, and then a lot of things y'all were talking about were like functional movements. And so I know, I don't even know who his name is, but it's S. Lorio ATC on Twitter.
Was saying something about before
anybody gets taped that they have to do these exercises. And so I just started doing that. I haven't even printed up the thing. I just wrote it on the board. But just the concept of, no, let's just come in and tape you. No, I don't mind taping you if you're doing something to get better. And so.
Right. And it goes again, it all goes back to your specific situation. We're in a very good situation where we will tape anyone who comes in who wants to be taped. To me, it's a personal choice, like I said, and, you know, for those that want to read it, they can go back, but we don't really have individual ankle programs for the preventative type of aspect of that. You know, if you want to get taped, that's fine, and we will tape you because we have the manpower and we have the time to do it. But again, you know, a lot of these high schools, when I worked in high school, I remember I had a line out the door, people waiting in line to get taped. I think back then we taped a lot more athletes on the high school level than they do now. But a better approach, like I said, is if you don't have the time, is to do like, it's to give them a quick exercise program like Steve was doing or yourself. And that might be more beneficial than applying some kind of tape. But again, it all goes back to your particular situation and philosophy and belief.
Yeah. And, you know, at first I was like, I don't want to tape anybody because we're wasting tape, you know, with limited budget. But then I'm like, I have student athletic trainers that need to learn how to tape. So yeah. I'll let anybody get taped as long as they're doing it. But then now I can do a little bit more and say, yes, I'll let anybody get taped as long as you're doing something to get better anyways. So
correct. You know, and all our guys participate in strength and conditioning programs. You know, we have mandatory athlete strength time or whatever. And again, you just look at the entire situation, or you look at your individual situation, make some decisions based on what you believe and what you can handle. Not too difficult.
All right, so what else do you have for me, Mr. Canelli?
Well, tell me. I mean, my personal philosophy is that, you know, number one, you have to show empathy towards the athletes you're treating. You have to care for the athletes you're treating. You have to do the right thing by your athlete. And, you know, how do we do it? It's all based on your approach. It's all based on your philosophy. And if you have a solid basic foundation, you're off to a great start. So if you stick with the basics, I think too many people get, you know, look at everything on the internet, say, got to do this, 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 and this. I mean, my treatment programs are pretty basic, but we build that foundation and we go from there. So I think instead of looking at how many different things you can do with your athlete, you want to look at how many things can you do to make that athlete better on the field or the court. And it's not really a question of quantity. It's more of a question of quality, because the athletes in this day and age get pulled in 17 different directions between meetings and other sports. You're back.
I think so. All right. So apparently there's call waiting on Skype. And I just didn't know how to switch back. So Josh called in and we answered it thinking it would jump into this call.
Right.
But I guess I have to add him in. And so I didn't know how to get back to you to tell you that we had switched to Josh. And anyway, so we're going to try and call him again just one more time. But I'm sorry if I cut you off on that last.
So Jeremy, let's hear a little about your back. Heard our background. I don't know anything about you other than you're working at a high school in Texas.
That's about it. I mean, I am married to my beautiful wife, Sarah, and I believe she's listening.
Sarah.
I have two young boys, one that's four, one that's two, or they will be this summer, and then we have one on the way, so we'll have three.
Oh, Congratulations.
Thank you.
I have my three myself.
You have three yourself? I know you said you have a boy in college. How old? I mean, is he the oldest? Or?
He's the oldest. He's a freshman at Gettysburg College, and then I have a freshman in high school and a sixth grader.
Oh, nice.
Two girls and a boy. Boy followed up with two girls.
Gotcha.
They're all unique, and they're all special in their own way.
Very cool. And so, I mean, other than that, I'm an athletic trainer. This is my 10th year in the profession as overall. I graduated from Houston Baptist University. That's where I did my internship with the Texans for one summer.
Oh, okay.
And then that was before Roland got there, though. That was still when it was Tom Colt, Kevin Bestine, and...
Those are my guys right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kevin's back in. He's with the Lions now.
Right.
Tom Colt, I want to know what he's doing. He's a good man. Yeah.
So, yeah, I know Kevin just went back with the Lions because he was actually the head of the Memorial Hermann Sports Medicine Group, which is
right here
in Houston, so...
Yeah. But Tom, I worked with way back in, again, the World League of American Football back in 91 and 92, and I got to know Tom pretty well, just a good man. So, yeah, that was a while ago, yeah.
Yeah, that was their second season, so, you know, that was before I graduated. Worked in a different high school for 3 years and then came here because this is where we bought a house, and my wife got a job in this area, so came over here. And actually, for my first 3 years here, I was teaching biology and doing the athletic training, so the majority of my day was spent teaching science or grading science lessons or preparing for science, and then I would come here and do this stuff after school. And so, and the other athletic trainer, Bill, he was teaching math, and so most of our efforts were spent there rather than in athletic training. But across our district, they mandated that the athletic trainers only teach sports medicine. So here at Pasadena, what that looks like is we have first period athletics, we have fourth period and seventh period athletics, and during those times, we also teach sports medicine. And so it really gives me a lot more time to set this stuff up, to take care of concussion stuff, to create the mass CPR trainings that we do, to go interview student athletic trainers. And so our school district has really done a phenomenal job of supporting what we do as athletic trainers. And so our job has changed a lot. And like you said, getting better. Well, before I didn't have time to get better. I just had enough time to get by. And so now I feel like we're getting better with everything we do. And so it's been really cool over the last few years. And then especially with talking to people like you doing this podcast, I just continually get better. So.
Well, I know Texas has always traditionally been a good place for a high school athletic trainer. And New Jersey actually is leading the charge too. I don't know the percentage, but a bunch of schools, full-time athletic trainers. And it's been that way for a long time. So, you know, obviously the push to have every high school have an athletic trainer is a wonderful thing. And hopefully they can achieve that. But, I really love my time at the high school, and I spent 4 years, I was actually a clinic high school athletic trainer. So I started out at, my boss, Ronnie Barnes at the Giants, has been there 35 years or so. Wonderful guy to work for. I started out in his clinic, and I was doing clinic half the day and high the other half. So you really, really, you know, get a good appreciation for treatments and working with the kids. And it was the coaches were great. So I really enjoyed my time there, and always had a goal of working with a big club, Giants. After about 5 years in the clinic, I finally realized that. So life has been good. I can't complain.
So that's interesting. Typically, from what I can gather, people don't go from high schools up to the professionals. Usually they'll start off in a college or start off as an intern and then kind of work their way in through there. But what did you do after the high school?
Well, basically, I got my degree at I got my master's degree at University of Virginia, and then I started working at a sports medicine center in Washington, D.C., and part of it was working at the Bullets at the time that are now the Wizards, Capitals a little bit, which is the hockey team, obviously. And a friend of mine told me that Ronnie Barnes was open place, and so they were looking for an athletic trainer, and I applied to it and got the job. Worked for about five years and worked at the high school, but I also – at that time, worked with the Arena Football League and the World League of American Football. So I got additional experience that way to supplement my football type of experience. And so that really helped me. And, you know, he never promised me the job, but when he did have an opening, you know, I was given that job. And you know, I'm still there. So obviously it's worked out. And I was actually going to physical therapy school. I applied and had to start classes in a few days, and he hired me and made a decision. This is what I always wanted to do, and I stayed. So, yeah, I did go back and get additional football experience, both in the Arena League, World League of American Football, before I joined on. But, you know, I'd also helped out in training camps with the Giants whenever I could prior to me being hired. But, you know, it's been a nice run. And, I feel fortunate to work for such a great organization. And I'm from the area, so is my wife, so it's really worked out well.
Yeah, like I was telling Roland when he was here, you know, I always dreamed of working in the pros, but then whenever I had my internship, I got to realize that it's not what you think, because foolishly I thought that, oh yeah, they only have 16 games, only about 20 weeks, they only work about half a year.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you get that and you realize, you know, 100 hours a week during training camp is something that's easily done. And then, you know, Roland was talking about how there's, you have to go to Indianapolis for the combine, you have to do all these physicals, you have to do all this paperwork, you're always there for rehab, and it's just like, whoa, that's really just not what I was expecting. And so, you know, I mean, it's good that you guys have four full-time. They had three when I was with the Texans. I'm not sure what they have right now, so.
Yeah, well, you need a good support team, and my family's an excellent support team, starting with my wife, Rita, and my son Ryan, and Leah and Mary, my daughter. So like you said, it's been a blessing that they've been there for me, because yes, I've missed holidays, we've missed birthdays, we've missed a bunch of different things, because during the season, people don't understand, it's a 7-day-a-week job, and it's, you're there, you know, 10 to 12 to 14 hours a day. Training camp, as you know, can be 16-hour days, so it's a big time commitment. But it goes back to, if you love what you're doing, the days go by pretty quick. I mean, there's days like any other day where it's like, oh gosh, I just want to go home. But for the most part, I wouldn't change a thing of what happened to me in my professional career. So again, it's just, I mean, I feel good doing what I'm doing, and I'm going to, you know, ride it out as long as I can, and we'll see. But in the meantime, I felt a little tug from a personal level to start something on my own and build something as I've never done that before, so that, you know, just to challenge myself. And it's been fun so far, but it's been a lot more work than I thought. So, and I'm just starting, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, and, you know, it'd be nice if we could get Josh back on. She's going to try again. And then he could give you some of that ideas for how to kind of build that. And, you know, I mean, obviously, yeah, you could start.
We can't get to it, I understand. But I see his picture up there, but I don't see him connected. Yeah, like I said, when you asked me for the Skype interview, I was like, well, I got to set up a Skype account because it's all new to me. But we seem to get this running.
So, I mean, honestly, with the podcast, one of the biggest ways for me is through Twitter. But then, you know, like whenever I talk to people like you, if you enjoyed it, then you recommend somebody and say, hey, you know, maybe this is a good idea for you to go talk to. You know, and if you didn't, then hopefully you're just not bad mouthing it, but you never know.
Yeah, well, let you know, it's one thing, as you progress through your life and your profession, you know, you meet more and more people. So let me see if I can help you out in that sense, and reach out to a few people and go from there.
And then hopefully people are listening here, and then they hear about Steve Kennelly Athletic. There's no, it's.
Come on now. I said it twice.
I know. It's Kennelly Athletics. Kennelly Athletics, right?
Yeah. That's, you know, when I was trying to figure out what to call it, I figured, well, I'm an athletic trainer. I do athletic rehabilitation, athletic reconditioning, also athletic development. So there you have it, at Kennelly Athletics.
All right, so they're Kennelly Athletics. I'll have the link to that in the show notes there, and hopefully I'll put
a few more hits, yeah. I think Josh had to go back to work.
Maybe. Maybe. Oh, yeah, that's a question. How did you get a day off today?
Well, you know what? the New York Giants were good to the entire organization and decided to take Friday through Monday off. So we were off Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday for Memorial Day, which is kind of unheard of, but very nice. So, yeah, when you said the 23rd, I looked in the calendar and said, well, that's an off day, so that's easy. So that's how you have it. You know, we can only have X amount of days with the players anyway in the off season, with the new collective bargaining agreement. So looking at the calendar, that's, you know, it was beneficial for everyone. Just to, we're right at that point in the off season program too, where, you know, I think the break is a welcome for recovery and regroup on the next week and hit it. You know, we'll move to our OTA schedules and get it going from there. So it came at a nice time.
Very cool. You got big plans?
No, you know, us athletic trainers, we just like to hang around and, you know, spend time with my family. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, we might do a day trip here or there, but the biggest thing is getting, you know, we don't see that family time often. Even in the off season, it gets tough. So take advantage of the time while we have it.
Okay, so Josh said he's still listening, but he does have to go back to work, so.
There you go. I figured that.
Maybe it's just meant to be that way. We'll end it here and, We'll do this again sometime.
Well, I appreciate your you having me on the show, Jeremy. It was enlightening to speak to Josh and yourself. So thank you very much. And if you need me again, just give me a shout. And I'll see what I can do to help you.
All right. Well, thanks for being so responsive there on Twitter, and welcome to Twitter. And really, again, I appreciate you having making the time to come over here. And I know you tried about four different times to call and make this work. So just the extra, just the extra effort on your part to.
Well, you know, when you commit to something, you commit to it. So I didn't want to leave you hanging.
All right. Well, enjoy your weekend off with your family and get some much needed rest.
Thanks very much. Take care.
Thanks. All right. So that's the Sports Medicine Broadcast, episode 83, with lots of different interruptions. It's ice to ice or not to ice. So we had Steve Cannelli, athletic trainer from the New York Giants. His website is KennellyAthletics.com. And then you have Joshua Stone. His is StoneAthleticMedicine.com. So you can check out either of those guys. There was really great conversation between them, and it was even better because I didn't have to say anything for a while. I think probably about 30 minutes where I just sat back and listened. So again, you can always check us out, SportsMedicineBroadcast.com. Again, SportsMedicineBroadcast.com, and I'll put links to both of those guys' website there. And if you ever listen live, you can use hashtag DSMB on Twitter, and I should be able to see that and ask your questions live. You can get CEUs through ghats.org, so becoming a member of ghats, about $20 a year, and you can get CEUs for each of these podcasts, and then all the details are there on the website. So again, ours is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. Mr. Cannelli is kennellyathletics.com. Josh Stone is StoneAthleticMedicine.com, and then ghats.org is how you can get the CEU. So for Jeremy, the sports medicine kids that stayed here to help out, their mics are all off. Mr. Cannelli and Josh Stone, that's a wrap.